Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
From VOA Learning English, this is As It Is. I'm Mario Ritter.
And I'm Anna Mateo. On today's As It Is, we talk about fish. In the second half of the show, we will hear about how China's growing fishing industry is affecting the environment.
Here are some words you may need to know to understand this story. To generate simply means to produce something. And suction is like the act or process of grasping something. For example, an octopus uses suction to move and catch food.
If something is incredible, it is difficult or impossible to believe. And clever means you are intelligent and able to learn things quickly. Now, let's hear Marcia James tell us about how fish eat.
Fish are animals that live in the water. They are also vertebrates, animals that have a backbone and a spine. They have gills that permit them to take oxygen from the water. But have you ever wondered how vertebrates eat food? Now, researchers at Brown University have X-ray video that shows the action in great detail. Many fish are power eaters. Bass, for example, can eat goldfish in one big swallow. Thomas Roberts is a biology professor at Brown University. He and his co-workers used new tools to record the fish's movements as it ate.
And those tools were a combination of high-speed X-ray videos combined with CT measurements of the bones of the skull in the bass and pressure probe measurements of the pressure in the water during suction feeding.
Thomas Roberts says the muscles in the head are not powerful enough to create that suction. He says they must work together with the body muscles used for swimming. Scientists had suspected this cooperation in the past, but until now, they had no proof.
Fish actually have to use this incredible linkages of skull bones to pull power from the body muscles, generate the really rapid motion in the head, and generate suction to pull in prey.
The finding is important to understand how not only bass, but some 30,000 species of water vertebrates evolved. Thomas Roberts explains.
So this tells us that this clever co-opting of swimming muscles to produce a feeding motion, maybe was really important for the evolutionary success of bony fishes.
The study was published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. I'm Marcia James.
I'm Anna Mateo.
And I'm Mario Ritter. You are listening to the VOA Learning English program As It Is.
Welcome back to As It Is. We just heard about how fish use their whole bodies when they eat their prey.
Now we move on to how we humans eat fish. We hunt them, and sometimes we overhunt them. Our next story is about how China's growing fishing industry is affecting the environment and fish habitat, the place where they normally live or grow.
China has the world's largest number of fishing boats. They search the oceans for fish. But Chinese boats are often criticized for overfishing. And they have had conflicts with boats from other nations in disputed waters, such as in the South China Sea. Jonathan Evans brings us that story.
China is expanding the size of its fishing boat fleet to try to provide enough food for its citizens and to export. But as the boats travel the world, they are often criticized for overfishing and for having conflicts with ships from other countries, especially in disputed parts of the South China Sea. China is the world's largest producer and exporter of fish. About half of the seafood it produces is exported to developed countries. It is also the biggest consumer of seafood. Duncan Ledbetter is the director of Fish Matter, a fisheries and natural resources consulting company. He says China's poor environmental and fishing practices have forced it to search for fish around the world.
Well, you've got two things happening. One is plain and simple overfishing. And then the second, which is sort of widespread, you know, north to south and from close inshore out to, you know, the edge of the continental shelf. But then you've also, particularly on the inshore, got some pretty significant pollution problems and habitat loss problems.
China now has 2,000 fishing boats, more than any other country. In 2013, a European Parliament study estimated that between 2000 and 2011, Chinese fishermen caught 4.6 million tons of fish every year. It said most of the fish came from African waters. The rest came from Asia, and smaller amounts from Central and South America and Antarctica. Peter Jennings is the executive director of the Australian Strategic Policy Institute. He is also a former senior official in the Australian Department of Defense. He says China's decision to expand where it searches for fish gives it a chance to increase its influence in areas that are important to its future. Last month, a Chinese company said it would expand its fishing operations to Antarctica. The announcement followed the opening of a fourth Chinese research station on Antarctica. China also has two large icebreaker ships, as well as planes and helicopters on Antarctica. Tensions between China and other countries have risen because of China's increased fishing activities. Last month, Indonesia destroyed a Chinese boat that it claimed was fishing illegally in Indonesian waters. And South Korea says the number of Chinese fishing boats operating in its waters is growing every year. More than 1,000 Chinese fishing ships illegally fished in South Korean waters in 2014. I'm Jonathan Evans.
I'm Mario Ritter.
And I'm Anna Mateo. Join us again tomorrow for another As It Is.
And check us out on Facebook or our website at learningenglish.voanews.com.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
Now, the VOA Learning English program, Words and Their Stories. Americans can sometimes begin a sentence with the words, "You're giving me." This expression usually describes a person's reaction to a surprise or to something unpleasant. First, let's look at an example from the world of business. What if you are asked to speak to a group of important customers, people who depend on your product or services? You prepare for your speech, but you still have concerns about how you will perform in front of the group. Minutes before the speech, you might tell a friend that you have the jitters. This means you are worried. Even experienced performers can get the jitters, especially before a big event. Now let's talk about your neighborhood. What if a stranger lives in a house near your home? The man does not appear normal. He may talk to himself and even raise his voice at imaginary things. He makes you very nervous, even fearful. So you might say, "I get the creeps every time he walks by." Or you could say, "That guy gives me the creeps." The willies are a lot like the creeps. You get the willies when you have a nervous feeling, like when you are in a forest and hear something unusual. These sounds give you the willies. Having a nervous feeling can also mean something or someone is giving you the heebie-jeebies. You might say, "I got the heebie-jeebies when I saw him looking at me." Also, it's a fun word to say, heebie-jeebies. Sometimes your body shows you what you are feeling in the form of tiny bumps on your skin called goosebumps. Goosebumps can appear when you are nervous, excited, or even very cold. In American English, you might say, "I get goosebumps every time I think about it," or "it gives me goosebumps." Butterflies are small, often beautiful insects, but they can also be a nervous feeling you get in your stomach, often before a performance of some kind. You might say, "I am looking forward to playing, but I must admit I've got butterflies in the pit of my stomach." Sometimes when a person likes another person romantically, they may say she or he gives them butterflies. They are excited at the thought of being with that person. Finally, some Americans, when frightened, may use the expression, "You almost gave me a heart attack." But they are not really having a heart attack. They just mean they were so scared that their heart might have stopped beating. A mother who sees her child fall from a tree might say the experience almost gave me a heart attack. In other words, the fall frightened her very badly. So if someone says they have the jitters, try to help them calm down. Tell them to take a few deep breaths. If you are told you are giving someone the creeps or the willies or the heebie-jeebies, it might be a good time to consider making some changes. Try not to be so unusual. If a person tells you that you give them goosebumps or butterflies, it means they like you a lot. So, stay the way you are. So now, if something or someone gives you the jitters, creeps, willies, heebie-jeebies, goosebumps, butterflies, or heart attack, you'll know what to say. For more Words and Their Stories programs, go to our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. Christopher Jones Cruz wrote this report in Learning English. I'm Ana Mateo.
I'm Rich Kleinfeld.
And I'm Shirley Griffith with the VOA Special English Program, People in America. Today, we tell about Bella Abzug. She was a member of the United States Congress in the 1970s. She also was a well-known activist for civil rights and women's rights.
Bella Abzug was well known for many reasons. She was a lawyer and activist. She represented New York City in Congress. She spoke in a loud voice, and she always wore large hats. Ms. Abzug supported women's rights and civil rights. She had strong opinions on many issues. She opposed the American involvement in the war in Vietnam. She made public her opinions on most important issues. In fact, she was called one of the most outspoken members of Congress. Bella Abzug also acted on her beliefs. She wrote legislation to prevent unfair treatment of women. She presented the first bill for equal rights for homosexuals. She often denounced the majority of the members of Congress who were white males. She said they did not know about the lives and problems of most people in America.
Bella Abzug did know about the lives of common Americans. She was born Bella Savitsky in the Bronx area of New York City in 1920. Her parents had come to the United States from Russia. Her father operated a food store called the Live and Let Live Meat Market. Bella said she knew from the age of 11 that she wanted to be a lawyer. At the age of 12, she gave her first public speech. It was in an underground train station in New York.
Bella attended Hunter College and Columbia Law School in New York City. She married Martin Abzug in 1944. He was a stockbroker and writer. He had no interest in politics, but he was his wife's best friend and supporter. They had two daughters. Bella Abzug became a lawyer in the 1940s. She represented labor union workers. She also represented people involved in civil rights cases. She often worked for no payment in these cases. In the 1950s, she represented people accused of subversive activities by Senator Joseph McCarthy.
Bella Abzug began wearing large hats when she was a young lawyer. There were very few women lawyers in America then. She told this story about why she began wearing hats. Working women wore hats. It was the only way they would take you seriously. After a while, I started liking them. When I got to Congress, they made a big thing of it. They did not want me to wear a hat, so I did.
In the 1960s, Bella Abzug became an anti-war activist. She organized a group of anti-war women called Women Strike for Peace. She opposed American involvement in the war in Vietnam. And she opposed testing of nuclear weapons. She led demonstrations in Washington against the war and in support of a ban against nuclear weapons. She became a leader of the movement against President Johnson because of his involvement in the war. In the early 1970s, Ms. Abzug also became a leader of the growing women's rights movement that was spreading across the country. She helped form the National Women's Political Caucus. In speaking to the group in 1971, she demanded equal rights for women in all areas of American life.
We're here to serve notice that as we approach the 200th anniversary of our nation, we will no longer take second place or last place to anyone. We are here to demand and win equal status in politics, equal pay, and recognition in our work, full equality in our civil rights, and in every aspect of our lives. And we are here to search out the substance and structure to build a practical, realistic political movement with the strength of millions of women behind it to win our objectives.
In 1970, Bella Abzug was elected to the House of Representatives as a Democrat from New York City. She was 50 years old. She was the first Jewish woman elected to Congress. Her campaign statement was, "This woman belongs in the House." She did not mean her house. She meant the House of Representatives. At the time, there were only 10 female members in the House of Representatives. During her first day as a member of Congress, Ms. Abzug introduced a resolution calling for an immediate withdrawal of American troops from Vietnam. The resolution was defeated. Later in her term, she tried other ways to reach that goal. She forced the administration of President Nixon to surrender documents about the Vietnam War that were known as the Pentagon Papers. She also was the first member of Congress to call for an impeachment investigation of President Nixon.
Ms. Abzug supported many programs to help American families. For example, she wanted national insurance to help pay for health care for all Americans. And she wanted the government to establish centers to care for young children while their mothers worked. She wanted these programs paid for with money cut from the budget of the Defense Department. She did not succeed in getting this legislation passed in Congress, yet she kept trying.
Representative Abzug was known for her forceful way of expressing her opinions. Yet House Speaker Thomas Tip O'Neill chose her as one of his assistants. She helped write the Freedom of Information and Privacy Acts. These laws restricted the right of the Federal Bureau of Information to withhold information. Ms. Abzug served in the House of Representatives for 6 years. In 1976, she gave up her seat in the House to campaign for the Democratic nomination for senator from the state of New York. She lost the election. She ran unsuccessfully for mayor of New York City. She also lost two more elections that would have returned her to the House of Representatives.
For 20 more years, Bella Abzug continued to work for women's rights. In 1979, President Carter appointed her the head of a National Advisory Committee on Women, a non-paying job. Later, President Carter dismissed her when she criticized his decision to cut money for women's programs. In 1990, she started the Women's Environmental and Development Organization, which works with international agencies. Ms. Abzug was one of the leaders of an international conference of women. Thousands of women attended that conference in Beijing, China, in 1995. They discussed ways for women around the world to gain equal rights.
Bella Abzug wrote two books. The first is called Bella, Miss Abzug Goes to Washington. It is about her first year in Congress. Her second book was published in 1984. It is called Gender Gap, Bella Abzug's Guide to Political Power for American Women. In her later years, she continued to serve as a delegate to Democratic National Conventions. She was a leader of the New York City Commission on the Status of Women, and she directed the National Parity Campaign to increase the number of women elected to political office.
Ms. Abzug once said that equal rights for women was at the top of the list of the many issues she supported. She was one of the first leaders of the feminist movement. She defined the word feminist this way: a person who believes that there should be social, economic, and political equality for women. She thought that the majority of Americans believed this. Many women supported Ms. Abzug because of her efforts to gain equality for women. She helped make it easier for other women to be elected to public office.
Yet Bella Abzug had enemies. Many people did not like her. They thought she was too loud, too aggressive, too independent, too liberal. However, most political experts agree that Bella Abzug should be included on any list of the most influential women in American politics in the 20th century. Bella Abzug died in 1998 following a heart operation. She had been in poor health for several years. She was 77. Many of her friends in the women's movement continue to miss her spirit, her voice, and her hats.
This program was written by Shelley Gullist. It was produced by Lawan Davis. The announcers were Rich Kleinfeld and Shirley Griffith. I'm Faith Lapidus. Listen again next week for People in America in VOA Special English.